Welcome to the Free Birth Podcast, a supportive space for people who are learning, exploring, and celebrating their autonomous choices in childbirth. Together, we'll unpack truths, share personal stories, and claim our ability to birth freely and intuitively. Here's your host, Emily Saldea.
Do you know it's your calling to become an authentic midwife? Do you dream of attending women in birth? Have you felt frustrated trying to be a birth worker in the system? Are you looking for a better way to walk with women in total integrity, supporting mother-led physiological birth? Are you dreaming of building a thriving, profitable business as a birth coach? Well, we are thrilled to announce that enrollment for our Radical Birthkeeper School is now open. Classes begin June 1st, so head over to our website and get the details. The time is now, and we need you to join us in this birth revolution. www.radicalbirthkeeperschool.com. Concluding our Radical Birthkeeper series, we have today an experienced traditional birth attendant, Lily. Lily was trained as a medical midwife and quickly came to learn that she could be no such provider. Instead, she found her way through traditional apprenticeships and trusting the call to serve women in a way that felt safest with mothers at the center. Lily shares how her own birth was a journey into darkness, and we discuss birth attendance as shamanism and how to say yes to that deep calling. All right, welcome everyone. Today we are continuing our series following radical birth workers around the world, remembering that radical just simply means serving women in full integrity outside the system. And so today we have my friend Lily. Welcome, Lily.
Thank you. Hey.
And Lily is a unlicensed midwife or radical birth keeper here in Colorado. So I'm really excited to be sharing your story as I don't know you well, but I do know that you serve women all over and in all different circumstances, and that you are, my understanding is that you are really somebody who is willing to receive and support women who are being risked out or pushed out of having supportive experiences in the system, as if that even actually happens. So yeah, I'm excited to hear your story and to contribute to this series of inspiring women to really find their own way, standing with women in full allegiance.
Yeah, totally. I know the risk out crowd is some of my favorite, because it's like people who find their intuition in the midst of the crazy birth experience. And so it's I love this. I love attending those births. They're super fun.
So take me kind of, let's first do maybe like an overview of what your work is and anything kind of worth contextualizing, and then I want to go kind of to the beginning of just where this work started for you. And you know, like we were saying before we were recording, I don't even know if you started in the system and then moved out of it, if you were always a traditional birth attendant. So yeah, tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, so where I am right now, I'm a licensed midwife. I got trained traditionally and then sort of had to decolonize my practice quite a bit. It wasn't that hard, actually, because it makes sense to just trust women's intuition or trust birthing people's way. But right now, I basically attend anybody who needs help. And I haven't had to say no to anybody at this point. Oftentimes it's people who are risked out, people who feel unsafe going to the hospital for whatever reason, custody things, various things. people who've had traumatic births in the past, and then just people who are really empowered and in wanting to birth outside of the system and just not have anybody, just not be violated by the system. And so I started traditionally, actually, I went to a birth clinic in El Paso called Maternidad La Luz when I was 17. And I really enjoyed my experience there, but in hindsight, it's the place I've seen the most violent, some of the most violent births. I have a lot of issues with the way that that school runs in relation to how it treats women of color and how people learn. I'm really grateful for the experience I got there. It's a really mixed bag, that one for me. So then my last birth there, I think it was on like my 18th birthday, and it was the birth of a 13-year-old mother. And her grandmother came with her, and they walked all the way from Juarez. And the grandmother was a midwife, and they were coming over to the clinic so that she could get citizenship for her baby. And I was like, please catch your grandbaby. I'll be here if you need any support. And it was a super busy day, so it was just the three of us. And she had a beautiful birth. And at the end, the grandmother was like, why don't you come like work with me? We have a lot of women in the kind of outskirts of Juarez that need support. Yeah, in Mexico. And so I left, part of me was thinking about going on, like continuing on with the school. And then I was like, no way, I don't think I can do the CPM thing. Your hands are so tied. Why even bother? So I went and I worked with that midwife in Mexico for a little bit, who was amazing and taught me a lot of the traditional ways. And then I came back here and I worked with a mountain midwife for a sec. And then I just realized that midwifery as we know it today is not a thing I can do. And I've just seen so much violence with it. And even when it's beautiful births and the midwife is awesome, it's really hard for me to not see the imposition of regulations and paperwork and questions and these things as a form of violence. And I would never want somebody to treat me that way. And I cannot treat other people that way. So I just started offering I want to call it a midwifery service, but it's not really, just like birth keeping for who came my way. And so I don't do paperwork. So I don't consider people numbers. I just couldn't do it. So I got all the training of a certified midwife, and then it's just very quickly I was just like, oh, that's not the way. I have the skills of a trained midwife, and that I carry meds. I know how to do hemorrhages. I've seen probably every complication in the book, and I know how to handle all the ones that can be handled. And I almost never have to do anything, because when mamas, when birthing people, when pregnant people are in their power, and when they're, allowed, goodness gracious, when they're, not messed with, people know when everything's going okay, and they know when something's going to go wrong. And so, like, for at least for the people who come out of the system, they're coming out of the system because they know everything's going to be okay, right? So I've never actually, I attend a lot of high risk folk who leave the hospital or who leave their midwife. And it's just because they know that they're okay. And they always are. I've never had any of those births. I've never attended any of those births and had them be, end up in anything wrong, anything hard. In my, I've been midwifing for about 10 years now, and I've attended over 200 families or 2000 families. And that's a lot of people, 2000 families in various situations. And I've never, ever seen a mama's intuition be wrong. And so for me as a midwife, it's really easy because I just get to listen and hold space. And if someone says something's up, then I'm there to hold space for that. So basically that's my journey. I've also practiced in refugee camps in East Africa, and I've practiced in hospitals in Honduras, and I've practiced in Mexico in various places. But mostly it's been attending women up here and up in the Colorado area, like between Denver and Fort Collins, or actually really between Colorado Springs and Fort Collins. And it's been such a blessing, such an honor to attend mamas this way.
And so your name just kind of gets passed around, and
I guess, yeah.
How does that work?
I had a doula web for a second, but a lot of my doula clients ended up being midwifery people anyways, they ended up just being like, I don't want to go to the hospital right now. And it's like, well, you don't have to, let's stay home. And then they have beautiful home births. But I took it down, and I have just been, it's just been word of mouth. And I actually don't know how most people get my name. I know that in some circles where they don't support unlicensed midwives, they know that I exist. And I've actually gotten some referrals from some of those midwives even. So it's just random. It's all over the place.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, that is definitely, if you're willing, I'd like to dive into some of that, like how to be underground, how to serve underground, what does transfers look like, what is even finances, like kind of the nitty gritty of being underground. And, you know, and you have a particular layer that you do carry meds, you do, you know, you do carry truly like the bag of the medical midwife. Yeah. So that has another layer, I would say, of risk, you know, because worst case scenarios, you know, you are carrying things that very much highlight the medical side.
Yes, totally. And I call them my good luck charms because I almost never use them. Because I use herbs more than anything else. I'm a trained herbalist. But I do carry them, and I do sometimes give IVs if the birth is super long and the person wants it, you know. But yeah, I don't see those things giving me that much more risk because no one's ever come and like, you know, explored my basket to see what's inside of it. But transporting, to be like, oh, this person's already had an IV. Like, you know, you just be really careful about what you say. Honestly, in Colorado, my transport rate is almost zero. I have almost never transported it. Let me think. I've transported twice in Colorado, and both were, three times. Two of them were elected. Like the mamas mm-hmm. just felt like it was a lot. They wanted to be in the hospital. Totally fine. I came with them as a doula, mm-hmm. And was completely accepted by the, you know, as much as any doula is by the hospitals we went in.
Like, what's the conversation there of where's the midwife? Where's the...
Right. Well, so I usually have this conversation before the person gives birth, if I've met them before they give birth, which is not always the case. Usually it's just like, it's not illegal to have an unlicensed birth, or not unlicensed. It's not illegal to have an unassisted birth, you mm-hmm. know? And they could, oftentimes people also say like, we wanted to go to the hospital, but we just didn't make it in time. Or like, mm-hmm. we're going now because we were in labor and we just had a feeling like it's time to go in. And I just play the stupid doula and it works pretty good. And I've never had a person I'm working with like say anything else, just be like, yeah, they're the doula. They don't know, mm-hmm. you know, it's all good. And I've never been questioned by hospital staff in any kind of a way. And then I had one family where the placenta was a previa accreta, and there's just no possible way that person can survive at home. And so we ended up going in, but we stayed at home a long time. And that was, but it was fine. We started labor at home even, and then went in and it had a beautiful birth. And
did she have that knowledge about her placenta from medical technology or from obvious symptoms?
She had chosen to get an ultrasound because she had had complications with a previous pregnancy that she chose to not continue. Mm-hmm. So she had gotten an ultrasound and found that the placenta was previa. But it was such an early ultrasound and placentas migrate, you know, and I've also seen, and I mean, working the way I do, I see all the exceptions, you know, I'm mm-hmm. like, well, I've actually seen somebody have an amazing birth with a placenta previa. That doesn't mean that it's necessarily a safe thing to do. But again, mom's intuition is always right. This person had a complete placenta previa, and not the person that went in, but the person who I saw give birth. And she was like, you can come over now. Like, I think I'm going to have a baby. And I'm like, oh, are you having contractions? And she's like, well, no, but I just have the feeling. So we like went over and we like opened a circle, and then she just let out this intense scream and her baby just came flying out. Like, what's going on? It was beautiful. The baby was breached and kicked her way through the placenta, which I didn't like. I don't even totally know how that's possible. But she had had no labor beforehand, no spotting, no anything, you know, that would be the risk, right? Because the risk is bleeding. But the baby just came out and pulled the placenta with her, and they named this baby Rocket just because she's such a spitfire. But it's like, I've seen it happen. Mm-hmm. So with this other mama, I was like, well, you know, we can stay at home until you bleed if you want, just because we're so close to a hospital. We can do whatever you want to do. And she, so we did that. We stayed at home until she was starting to have a little bit of spotting, and then we went in. And it was fine. Yeah.
And did she have a surgical birth?
She did. Yeah. She had a surgical birth that was very beautiful and difficult just because it's really not what she wanted. But in that case, that's like one of the very few cases where I'm like, I'm so grateful for cesareans, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I heard you a couple of times say, you know, mother's intuition always knows, and that you haven't seen that be wrong. And that's an interesting kind of layer there, because what even is wrong, right? Like, it's all about the mother being supported to fully take responsibility and evaluate her own risk. And
exactly.
So I know women who have done so, and their children didn't survive childbirth, you know, mm-hmm. and I know women who are really at peace with that, and they fully understood the risk that is innate to being alive and to childbirth and pregnancy and postpartum and life in general.
I guess wrong, I mean like an undesired outcome or something, you know, like I've never seen a mama be like, oh, I wish I would have known, or I wish somebody told me, like, mm-hmm. like I've, in, you know, like I said, I've attended over 2,000 people and I've never seen that be wrong. Mm-hmm. And if something is happening, if they are not comfortable with death as an outcome and something's happening with their baby, like they know before I do, you know, like they, mm-hmm. people are always like, can you just listen real fast? Or like, something's weird, we got to go in, or just whatever. People know what's up, and that's awesome.
So you offer, do you offer the different medical aspects of what a CPM may have, like sutures or Pitocin or
I got it all.
A Doppler.
I have a full kit, and I always check in with the person. I never touch people or do anything to people without their full consent in the moment. Like, even if a baby needs to be resuscitated, I ask the parents first, just because that's like one of my shticks. Like, it has to be consensual. And so I carry the full kit, and I, like I said, I consider it my good luck charms because I almost never have to use any of them. I have them and they're all up to date. I have a couple of midwife friends around who are licensed and who, you know, who keep me up to date. Every mm-hmm. now and then when I go to Mexico, I can just grab those things mm-hmm. in the pharmacies. So
how do you navigate, or what's kind of your take on things like vaginal exams?
I think there's a place for everything and almost never with vaginal exams. And mm-hmm. it's really up to the person. However, I always have like, I'm always like, cool, if you want a vaginal exam, I'm totally down to do it, but let's talk about this first. Like, why do you want it? What do you want to know? Like, just because I've seen, I don't actually believe that vaginal exams are that helpful unless like there's really something going on, you know. I feel like you can tell baby's position just by how the hips are looking or by how the labor's going, and you don't have to like feel necessarily the sutures of the head. Mm-hmm. And like I'm okay with all presentations. I love breech babies. I love, you know, whatever. Like, baby can come out however they want to come out. Baby will come out. We know that. Babies always come out. And so the numbers, I just don't see making any darn difference. Like, I've seen, mm-hmm. I personally was 9 centimeters for 3 days. And I know people who've been 10 centimeters for long periods of time. And mm-hmm. I also know people who were like 1 and then gave birth like 2 hours
later. Oh, totally.
Or like that, you know, who knows if that the woman who had the previa was dilated, like, who knows, you know? So mm-hmm. I just don't think the numbers mean almost anything. Just because they can change immediately. And I don't like vaginal exams. I'm happy to do it if somebody wants them.
Mm-hmm. So how do you navigate the arena of trust, which, you know, I think we would both agree is kind of inherently self-protective to this type of work. So when you are joining, you know, women that you've never met before, or getting, you know, referred to people at the end of their pregnancies, and navigating, like you said, often a higher, air quotes, higher risk population. How do you navigate that dynamic? How do you set yourself up energetically or logistically to be self-protective, you know, or smart, whatever is like the right word there for you? And how do you navigate the trust that is kind of needed, the mutual respect and reciprocity and understanding, and like, what does that look like for you as a independent midwife?
Right. Well, I always just have the conversation with the parent beforehand. Even if they're in labor, I just have a quick little like, hey, we're putting all of ourselves at risk. Please, please, if we go to the hospital, just call me a doula. And like, I'm just here, you know, like also this is your birth and I'm not going to do anything to you. That's not, you know, your decision. So a lot of it is that like, it's all in the parent's hands, right? Like you can't, like it's all their decision what happens. And I'm just there to support them and perhaps be, you know, like have, you know, have the herbs or have the meds on hand if they want it or whatever. So I've never actually had anybody, I've never had to worry about that. And I also just feel like, and I don't know if this is the best thing to say, because if like encouraging people to step out, but I feel like I just have a contract with spirit where I just say, whoever comes to me is who, you know, whoever calls me is yeah. who I'm supposed to support, and it's going to work out. And I know that spirit will just take care of me. Mm-hmm. And so totally. Far that's been true. And I totally trust it. And like, there's been times where other midwives have, referred people to me. And then that person is like, actually, I think I'm going to go to the hospital. And then they end up having like, you know, a stillbirth or a really hard birth or whatever. And in ways that I'm like, oh, cool. It makes sense. That person wasn't supposed to come to me, you know, like mm-hmm. they were supposed to be there for whatever reason. And
It's as if we could like really organize around the mother making her own decisions.
Exactly. And so, yeah.
Mind blowing.
So for me, it's just like, I am not doing anything. So there's no reason for anybody to be mad at me, because I'm not going to tell anybody, like, I don't have any opinions in the place. I'm just holding space mm-hmm. for what a parent wants, what, you know, what a birthing person wants. And yeah.
So I hear you consistently saying parent and birthing person. Do you work with a lot of men?
Yeah, I work with a lot of the queer community who doesn't identify on the gender spectrum, or who identify as trans men, or who you know are just in various like gender fluid identities. And so, yes, I do work with a lot of queer folk, and it's great. Yeah,
I'm so kind of smitten with your story that it's just such a great example of you being down for the work. It called you so early and you just kept saying yes and kept saying yes and finding your integrity with it. And from what I understand, you're pretty darn busy, you know, this vocation is just calling, and it really yeah. speaks to, you know, in a relatively large, you know, city area in which you live. I mean, of course you're busy, because I know there aren't many women willing to do what you're doing. How does that look with the rest of the birthing community? How does all of that work with licensed midwives? And I mean, even though we are in a city, I know the birthing community is still fairly small and fairly tight.
Well, the people that don't like me, and it's not like they don't like me on a personal level, they just don't like unlicensed midwives.
Dissenters.
Right. And they're mostly the Denver midwives, and not all of them, but they don't like it, because the way that the system has been set up for midwives is that if I get investigated, they have to pay for it. Right. So they've set up a system where if somebody, you know, if any midwife gets investigated, all the midwife's taxes go up, or however it goes. I don't totally understand.
Whoa.
But it makes sense why they're like, why are you doing this? You're going to raise our taxes. We don't have, you know, we're not getting paid enough as it is. Like, you know, we don't have extra, so that you can just be flippant about this, you know? And it's like, well, totally. And also like, I pretty much have like good outcomes, and like, I'm not going to get caught. So don't worry about it. You know, like, you don't have to know I exist. It's cool. Go do your thing. But I know that
you're not flippant about it. I mean, right. The fact that you very intentionally are willing to go above and beyond of standing with the people that call on you, you know, with actively risking yourself to not be beholden to the systems that oppress us and handcuff midwives. Like, it's, I don't know. That's right. It's pretty like offensive that
I also wonder if it's a little bit of like, just like remorse on their part of like, mm-hmm. you know, not very few people go into midwifery because they want to like control women and bend
totally.
To regulations. Like people go
and in yet,
yeah, right. And yet people are scared because the system is really strong, and it's hard to decolonize your mind when everything coming at you is like, be scared, be scared, be scared. Right. So, like that's why I think that's one of the reasons why there's so much violence in the hospitals, because they're all scared of a darn lawsuit, you know, like they can't practice in like a conscious way. And same with midwives.
Right. And their training is all totally rooted in being the hero, you know, and that, and from like the broken little lady who doesn't know anything, you know, when we as a culture set up the dynamic of a birthing woman, that she's essentially stupid, you know, and that she needs to be saved from this horrific experience.
Stupid and passive. It's just like, no. So
yeah. And a flawed machine, right? Like it's all obviously obstetrics and now midwifery as a medical extension of that is all rooted in, you know, I read this thing in an obstetrical book a long time ago that said, birth is not proven normal until 3 days postpartum. And it really sums it up, doesn't it? Like you don't even get the chance. You don't even get the chance. Whereas authentic midwifery, which is largely not practiced, but it sounds like you do. And I do thankfully know many women around the world who do practice authentic midwifery. And I would flip it to say birth is normal until proven otherwise, right?
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. And like, if you look at the statistics even, you know, to like, it is normal the vast majority of the time.
Of course.
Right. And normal, by normal, I mean like without need of any interventions for, you know, an outcome that has no morbidity or mortality, you know, like,
So have you navigated the realms of death work much?
Well, so I do death work on this, you know, I do death work with elders and just with other people with terminal illness, but I have not actually had any deaths. I have attended home stillbirths, where it was known prior. But I have not, as they say, like, I haven't lost anybody here, you know, which is not really the words I'm wanting to use, but I haven't ever had a death of a,
you haven't witnessed a surprise.
I haven't witnessed a surprise death in the US. Actually I had in the clinic, the clinic that I trained in, there was a death of a mother at the fault of the hospital, but I witnessed that when I was,
oh my God.
Yeah. So hard. But when I was practicing in Africa, there was a really high prevalence of malaria and various different things. So there was quite a bit of death actually of babies, just because malaria causes a lot of fetal death. I've seen some in Mexico, and I've seen just a couple maternal deaths that were not under my care, but that I was supporting another midwife, not in the US. And yeah, I was just in Mexico recently sitting with a large circle of radical women who pretty much all free birth in this one sweet community. And somebody brought up a concern of like, you know, like, what about death? And they're all like, death is part of the cycle, you know, like death is okay. And just a comfortability with that. So I really can't speak to it that much since I have not had it here. And yeah. Yeah, I've come really close, but I have not had it myself.
So tell us more about your work in Mexico.
Yeah.
Were you attending births down there?
Well, so when I, you know, like when I left that school, I was attending lots of births in Juarez, but just recently I was there only for, you know, like I think 5 months, and I was attending births, just a few. Most of the women in the community that I was in, really love midwives as like consultants more, like to be like, hey, is this cool? Or like, hey, I was thinking about like the cord around the neck. What do I do if that happens? But they don't actually want you to be there, which I really love. I think it's so rad. I love witnessing birth. It's great. But when somebody feels like they just don't need you there, it's great. Cause it's just like, cool. You are so in yourself that you just don't, like, you're good. So
like birth is such an integrated part of the consciousness. So when you say that most of these women free birth, do you mean they just have their family around and it's just like another day in their life kind of thing?
I mean, it's a really big thing, and we tend to like wrap a lot of ceremony around the beginning, but usually in the birth, just in this particular village I was in, most of the women are just with their partner and their other kids, and maybe their mom or something, but usually nobody other than like really close family.
Have you ever seen that video? It's a Mexican midwife. She now lives in Brazil. Her name's Nayoli.
I don't know. What is the video?
Do you know who that is?
It's really called Birth. Familiar.
Yeah, it's like very popular in the birth world. It's called Birthday, and it's this Mexican midwife lives in a small village in Mexico, and it's just like a 20-minute little documentary of the birth of her third child.
Yeah, they used to show that at the clinic I started.
Exactly. They show it. like doula trainings, and I used to show it to my prenatal clients and all this stuff. And it didn't even occur to me until I had already started Free Birth Society that that was a free birth.
Yeah, totally.
It never occurred to me because obviously, you know, free birth is so vilified throughout North America. And yet this one particular video was a free birth, but maybe because she was a midwife, it gave people more permission to support it. I'm not sure. So how does this go on to inform you becoming a mother? Because it sounds like you were attending births from the time you were 17, 18. And then, and how old, you have one child, correct?
Yep. I got one kiddo.
And he's like two or something.
Yeah. 2.5. Yep.
And so how does this go on to, it's always so interesting to me when women like myself, you know, spend all these years attending before we enter, you know, that rite of passage, and then the things that stay the same and the things that are totally different. And I just remember in my first couple of days postpartum being so floored and blown open, having gotten to walk through, you know, through that veil myself, and really was able to feel the birth space in a very different way now that it was a part of the fabric of my consciousness.
Yes.
So I'm wondering how that was for you.
I think very similar. I think a lot of my birth was about death. Like I chose to do it unassisted. I ended up transporting myself. My unassisted version was being either totally alone or with my partner who is not very supportive, who just does not know how to hold that space. And also were, you know, was just not super supportive. And kind
so
of
you were alone with just, with just him.
With just him and or just myself, and in like a tiny cabin that was so sweet, but it had no running water, so I had no hot water, and that ended up being kind of an important part of my release. Ooh. Yeah, it was, and like I had to keep the fire going to keep warm. It was just kind of, it was just a lot to handle. In hindsight, I wish I would have had a little bit more support, but I had I've just seen so much abuse in the birth space that I had a really hard time trusting that anybody could really hold space without like doing something unconsensual, which is my own things that I had to work through. And it's funny that I ended up in the hospital, but
yeah. Right. So you didn't have any women in your life that it felt like the right
space. I did not, mostly because it was like midwives or doulas who, you know, are just used to a different model of it. And it's not a model I'm at all comfortable subjecting myself to. In hindsight, I didn't totally know if I was doing it again, there are two potential midwives I might consider having. I love a lot of midwives in this area, like really dear, dear friends and lodge sisters and things. And I just have a hard time trusting that they could put away like the really, really intense training that has been in their minds again and again and again.
That's legit.
Yeah. And I've just heard midwife sisters who I'm just like, oh, you're like my comadre and I love you, discuss births where, you know, they're like, and then I pulled out the Pitocin and I'm like, okay, well, did you ask the mom? Did you try herbs first? Did you like, what was in, if I had you at my birth, that you would just pull that out before I was okay with that, or just like do it before, you know, because you're in emergency mind without my consenting. And it's like, yeah. So I just was not in a space that I was able to feel comfortable with anybody in my birth.
Well, it doesn't even sound like it was about you not being in the space. It was that there weren't the right people, you know what I mean? Like, which comes first? I mean, maybe you would have been open to it if you had been seeing women really able to hold shamanic space, you
know, right. And that's really what I needed was a medicine worker more than a midwife.
That's what we all need.
Yeah, exactly.
Me too. So, but that is a midwife. That is authentic midwifery. I mean, when we pull back the layers of the, you know, this whole just absolute betrayal of what midwifery has, you know, become, what it really is at the GUI center, you know, is shamanic walking, you know, shamanic holding, shamanic work with women. Right. And it's really quite appalling that there's so many liars out there.
I agree. Yeah. And also like, sort of, I've been to one midwifery school and I've had friends and others, and like so few actually delve into the depth of the altered state or transformation in that way, or I don't know. And a lot of my personal birth was about death. I was really okay. I felt very much like I was going to be confronting my own death, the death of this little one coming through. And that was all okay. And I really wanted to go into it. And nobody could hold that space with me. Like nobody could, and which because of fear, right? So like if somebody attends a birth where someone dies, like it's on them, whether they're a birth worker or not, you know? So potentially, not always, but potentially. So I couldn't ask a lot of my sisters to come because right. I was like, there's a, you know, I'm really wanting to do nothing. And I really want to like embrace the fullness of the veil in my own body. And I just, I didn't want to put anybody at risk. And I just didn't have anybody that would have really been able to like accept that risk in a good way.
Yeah.
And I've just seen a lot of midwives who, when they do break the regs for people, like they have such intense fear that it's almost like not worth it, you know, like
it's told 100%. I mean, like, I know so many women who think they want a free birth. And so they hire midwives to be doulas.
Right.
And I get it. I think it's strategically, I understand kind of the first layer of thought there, but it's asking a dog to be a cat. And so don't do that.
Right.
So then, okay. So then you are, it sounds like you have a very long birth and you feel largely alone. You don't have a great setup in the cabin.
Well, and also get this. So like, I feel like I'm a pretty good, I feel like as a midwife with other people, I don't touch without consent. I don't do vaginal exams. I don't listen unless the person wants it. I'm just like really, I'm like sort of intensely hands off unless the person asks for something different. And with myself, I was super not that way. I was like, I like somehow just reverted back to this like colonized midwifery mindset.
Totally.
And I was like checking myself all the time. And like, I so broke my water even. I'm just like, what? How am I doing? So it was ridiculous. Wow. And so I was checking myself and I was like, I was in active labor for 6 days, and vomiting.
What the fuck?
Yeah, really intense and vomiting. Almost anything I didn't get have almost any food during that time. Mm-hmm. Was really having a hard time holding down liquids. And I was like 9 centimeters for 3 of those days, and like it was just very intense. And then was just having an unsupportive partner. I was in a really cold house. I didn't have any water. It was just a lot.
Oh my God, that sounds awful.
It was just not. Yeah, like in hindsight, I really could have set that up a bit better. But I also just didn't have that many options, or didn't feel like I could really create those options for myself, or that I wanted to. I guess I wanted it to be hard in some ways. I don't really know. Right. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. There sounds like there's a lot of layers to it.
There's so many layers, and it was really amazing because we were in the mountains, and like this mountain lion came down and like parted the mist and like said, hey, and these foxes came up. So there was a lot of beauty to it, and I had a lot of intense visions. But yeah, there was nothing easy about anything in that labor.
Wow.
Well,
it makes me think about Yolanda's, one of her famous quotes is birth will decimate you. And that's one of its gifts.
Yeah. Totally.
And I remember after, you know, obviously, you know, I had a long labor and I remember not 6 days, but I remember, you know, after the second day being like, I'm not decimated. So I guess I'm nowhere near having this fucking baby because I'm still fine. Right. So when is this going to decimate me? And then it eventually did.
Right. Well, I felt decimated on like day 3 and I was like, all right, I'm ready.
That's fair.
I can decimate
it. Fair. Yeah. Day 3 is fair.
But I actually think that's one of the things that informed my practice the most was being decimated. Like understanding exactly. Like that. Now I can hold space. I know a lot of midwives who are amazing midwives that have never had children. I trust them completely. They're excellent. But myself, having been decimated, I can understand and hold the space in a medicine way so much deeper now. And I also it's a medicine journey for me. That's so much deeper now that I've been on it. I'm like getting chills. Like, the intensity of that space for me, was so wonderful and something that I've seen. It was so hard and it took so long to heal from, and I'm still sort of processing it all, but I see how much deeper I can hold space now. Like even just silently when somebody is being decimated.
Yeah. So. And it's a lot of working with the darkness and allying to the darkness and processing that, and that it's not obviously all rainbows and butterflies. And
And that's my jam anyways. Like I walk in the like shadow work is I'm down, I'm in, but going there yourself in such an intense way and being like brought to that space.
It's like and the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
And you didn't have you know, the shaman holding while you navigated that darkness, which obviously is what you do now, but that's everything, you know, I'm not going to say everything happens for a reason because I hate that sentence, but it's sad that women are navigating their darkness and their deep vulnerability, which often is not pretty and can be really disorienting without that shamanic holder. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think of like in plant ceremonies, when you do have that right person and you can really lose your mind and lose your control and still be held in a container of safety.
And that's it. Yeah, that's totally it. Like you are completely transforming your entire being in like a very short bit of time. And it's very intense. And like someone's there to hold you or you know, the container's there to hold you, the fire's there to hold you, whatever it is that you've set up, like you will be held. And I had a dream in my early pregnancy that Baba Yaga had come to me and was like, I'm your midwife. And I was like, great. So I'm being like midwifed by the really harsh crone. And it's really what happened. Like my birth was really very much held by, you know, sort of the dark unconscious force of the crone. And it was really intense. And it's probably exactly what I asked for. And it's what I got. So, and I'm grateful for it. As hard as it was.
Yeah.
And then I ended up going to a family member's house to try to, I just couldn't handle holding the energy that my partner was putting on me. So I was like, let's just go. I'm going to try to take a shower. And then it was like day five, I think. And I felt a bulging bag and was like, I'm just going to break this because I know that like my partner can't handle being this way much longer. I don't know if I can. So I broke the water and there was like very light neck in the water. But then which it wasn't a big deal to me, but I just couldn't really feel the little one move as much as I had been right after I broke the water, which makes sense because if they engage a little bit more, they won't move quite as much. But in my mind, I was like, and I had left my fetoscope up at the cabin. And so I was talking with the family member and elected to go in to the hospital I started pushing as soon as I broke the water and I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop pushing. Like my body was just doing it. And then I checked myself and I had gone from a 9 to like a very swollen 3. And like if numbers, you know, if you're paying attention to numbers, that's like a very depressing thing, right? And so, but again, numbers mean absolutely nothing really. So, and that's a really common story with survivors. I see that happen a lot where you're like almost there and then you have to like take four steps back and then like reapproach the gate again and again.
Well, you're like rewriting your whole relationship to it.
Right. And so, so I ended up going in cause I was thinking like, if I'm pushing and I'm just going to push till I'm closed, then like baby might be distressed and I might need to get like an epidural to stop pushing. Cause I just can't stop.
That's exactly why I went in.
Yeah, totally. I know.
Crazy.
Yeah. We have a mutual friend that attended your birth and she was like, oh my God, your birth sounds so much like Emily's. And I was like, yeah, totally. But so I went in and I was like, y'all, I just need an epidural. I'm declining everything else. And then I saw that it was fentanyl. And I was like, hell no, I'm not giving my baby fentanyl. I asked actually, I was like, epidurals aren't fentanyl, are they? And they're like, no. And then they brought out the little pack and it said fentanyl.
What did
right
you
on
think?
It.
I don't what even, did you think they were?
I don't even know. I thought it was something else. I thought it was more just like a spinal block. I don't know why my brain was just, but I didn't.
Well, it's both. I mean, first of all, 5 days in labor, you're allowed to not think straight.
Yeah, so. Totally. But also,
but like, for anyone listening, let's make sure they know that an epidural is local anesthesia with either Stadol, fentanyl, you know, and it could be paired with morphine as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And I had asked if there was, you know, any narcotics or opiates in the epidural. They said, no, I asked if it was.
Oh my God.
No. And my family and my partner both have like really strong histories of opiate addiction and narcotic addiction. And I was like, there's no way I'm giving my baby this. Like, I don't give a shit if I have to do something, whatever it has to be done. Like, I will not take this. And so, the midwife that I was, that I came in and the midwife that was on the CNM, I was like, yo, I'm a midwife. I know what's happening. This is what's going on. I'm declining all of the shit because my water's broken. I'm just declining it all because I know I'm okay. You're welcome to listen to baby with a fetoscope for, you know, some time. But then I just need to hang, or then I probably need to go home. And she was like, well, because there's neck in the water, you can't go home. and the insurance won't do it. And I know they told you that too, and it's maybe not true. I don't totally know, but they said my insurance wouldn't cover it. And
no, they never told me that.
I don't know, but they said they're like, insurance won't cover it if you leave. There's muck in the water. You have to stay because it'd be against medical advice or whatever. So I was like, okay, well, I'll just stay and decline everything and just do it myself in this stupid room. And so.
And wait, hold on real quick. So what was the thing that brought you in? Was it the epidural?
Yeah. Because medically I was like, okay, been in labor 6 days, water's broken, light mech, you don't have a fetoscope to check baby's heart. Again, I'm like, first, all of a sudden I just revert back to like really medical midwife mind, which I never, ever do with other people. Mm-hmm. Which I'm just like, why did you do that? But it's just, I think it was kind of the last decolonizing. They asked me to pee in a cup and I asked if it was for protein. I was like, well, my water's broken, so I'll have positive protein and I'm declining any antibiotics. And they said, yeah, it's for protein. It ended up that they were trying to drug test me without telling me, which I wasn't on any drugs. I would have happily peed in a darn cup. They ended up calling CPS on me later for that. They're like, you declined the drug test. And like, you never told me you were giving me a darn drug test, but it's a good thing to know now for people going in. I ended up just like hanging in the water on basically knee chest for a while until I could kind of stop pushing. And, the midwife that was on was really respectful. She was like a German woman and she was very, very respectful. And then at the final end, it was a change of shift, and it's always the story. It was a change of shift to a midwife that has been kind of like jokingly called the worst midwife in Colorado. Yeah, I know. I'm like, oh, of course, this is the person that I get. I've heard so many stories since with this particular midwife, and they've all been hella dramatic. She was like, why don't you get on your back and let's just have this baby? And I was like, well, I'd really like to try maybe hands and knees or, you know, squatting. And she's like, well, you have to do it on the bed. And it's like, well, I don't know. It's really, they didn't put any bars up or anything. And so it felt like I was going to fall off. And I was like, well, I'd like to try it here. And once I can feel that baby's coming, I'll get up on the bed so you can see what's happening if you want. And it was just like, no, she was touching me without my consent a whole bunch. It was extremely violating. She had her fingers all up inside my body after I was telling her, please don't, that's traumatic. Please don't do that. That hurts. I don't care if I tear. It's okay. And she's like, you do your job. I'll do mine. This is very, oh, it was so, yeah, it was felt extremely violating in all the ways. And
your partner is just
my partner watching. Is just kind of zonked out next to me. Not helpful at all.
Wow.
And, you know, granted he was really sleep deprived, but also he's just a different kind of a human. Doesn't totally know how to hold space for that kind of stuff, but it is what it is. But yeah,
you're not with him anymore.
I am in the process of leaving him right now. So,
okay. Cause yeah. I was like, how do you bounce back from that, man? Yeah, some serious betrayal.
Yeah. It was extremely hard. And especially like as a midwife to have like that be what my experience was so disappointing. Right. And also like really good medicine for me in some ways, mm-hmm. I guess. And, but yeah, baby was born. I like immediately grabbed him, and like pushed off the pediatricians. I was like, he's crying. He's totally fine. Look, he's latched. Please don't touch him. Please don't touch me. All is good. I'm declining everything. And so then like 5 minutes postpartum, I have like the whole pediatrician team come in and telling me how I'm killing my baby because I'm doing a lobus birth. Like, and she pulled out my placenta and I'm like, it's not detached yet. See, you can feel that it's flat up here. It's not detached. And she, again, was just like, you do your job, I'll do mine. And she totally prolapsed my uterus a good bit, which I'm still working on getting back. And it's just like, yo, who teaches you guys? Like, this is ridiculous.
And you have to be so many different things at once, exactly. When you give birth in war.
Right.
You know, you have to have like your wits about you in a way that doesn't, you know, that totally like caps what could have happened, you know, the safety and the wild woman that's right. In respect and reverence, like that, having to contain that and do that in a way that is yeah, in battle is just,
it's intense. So painful. It's intense. And also like, you know, having like them immediately come messing up with this bonding time. And then, you know, the people come and they press on your belly so much harder than is necessary. Like I've been doing this for 10 years. I know how to get clots out of the uterus. I can do it myself in a way that won't hurt me. Like, please leave me alone. So it's, I totally respect people's decisions to birth in a hospital. Like to me, it's like whatever the birthing person wants is what's good and they should have access to that. But it's hard for me to ever feel like a hospital birth cannot have violence in it. Cause it's like, even if even if you want it, like, do you really want somebody coming in, like, causing you pain? That's not totally necessary. Do you really want somebody coming in and telling you what to do when it might not be the right thing? Do you really want, you know, it's just like, is that really what you want? It's like, I've witnessed gorgeous hospital births. I've had like three hospital births out of many hundreds that were absolutely gorgeous births. But the postpartum was then like super intense, you know, like immediately the person's like rushed to the thing. And yeah, it's like you can't have it on. And then like, oh yeah. So it's hard for me. Like, I completely respect people's choices. I don't respect that system at all. And I don't understand why we allow it to be that way, you know? So
yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's like the, how can you respect someone's choices and not the system that they're choosing when we can pretty safely assume they aren't aware of how much abuse and violence is about to happen to them and their child?
Totally. But I also know that for some people, their homes aren't a safe place to give birth either, right? So it's like, what options do they have if they don't have the community whose homes they could birth at, you know? And it doesn't mean it's like better or worse or anything's, you know, it's like, just like that we live in a very broken system. And so it's like there are many choices and the vast majority of them are very broken and have an element of violence towards you know, the body with a woman. Yeah. There, you know, midwives that practice in this way, in the way that I try to practice and the way that some midwives around here try to practice, like, to me, that's the only way I've seen that doesn't have violence. And I, you know, and you have to have some little parts of it, which is like, you have to have a place to birth in. And granted, I've, you know, helped babies come out in cars and tunnels under the city and various different fields, you know, but also like a place to do your postpartum, a place, to, you know, it can be complicated, you know, but. Which is why the vast majority of the time I have like a birthing person in my house. Like, I have so many people give birth in my house, but yeah, go on.
And I think it makes it more complicated that most people going to birth in the system have no idea what's about to happen.
Right. Or they've already like resigned themselves to being treated this way. And that's what it is. It's like, I think people do sometimes have an idea because we see on TV like the pooling and the intensity and whatever, you know, that ridiculous idea of birth that we have. And people are just resigned to it. They're resigned to giving their power up to the medical system because it's what's best. Like, what? Like, it goes so much deeper than birth, you know, like we have to, I'm using the word decolonize, but you know, it's existed in pre-colonial times as well. We just have to like really detox the fear out of our system and regain the idea that we deserve to be treated without violence as a female body. Like, good Lord, like this whole system is based on violence towards the female body, you know? So it's like, it goes so much deeper than even just birth. It's like all of our gynecological things. It's like people do know, and they've just already resigned themselves to being totally treated that way, you know? Like, it's very, very sad, which is why I really love what I do for work. Mm-hmm. And I love when people leave. Like, I've had a lot of hospital walkout mamas, and it just makes me so excited because it's like, cool, you're finally realizing this, that you deserve so much better than that.
Yeah. So you said at the beginning of this that sometimes you get called in labor to go attend. Pretty
often. I probably have as many people that I don't know before I'm, you know, at their birth that I do know. It's about half of the people that I'm attending right now, or just in general. And usually it's that people are, you know, in the hospital being made to do a decision that they know is not right in their bodies. Like, I had one mama who was a fourth time, this is her fourth baby, and she had birthed all the other ones in the hospital, but totally natural, super beautiful. She really enjoyed those experiences. And they were going to give her a cesarean for low water, or no, because her waters had been open for like too many days or something silly. And she literally walked off of the operating table, pulled out her IV in her darn hospital dress, and just like walked out, which I love.
Wow.
So I get a lot
of those. And she just happened to have your number in her back pocket?
You know, she had like a medicine friend who goes to Sweat Lodge with me sometimes, and like who actually had been to a Sweat Lodge with me one time. And the medicine person like sent out like a group call and was just like, can anybody support this mama? And I was like, yeah, totally. Ended up having like the most gorgeous birth. We were like, you know, she was like surrounded by sisters and we were all drumming because we knew these certain medicine songs, and the baby like came out during like the Mexica butterfly song. And just like, it was beautiful. But regardless, and a lot of them are, you know, want to birth in birth centers or with, you know, CPMs. But then they get transferred to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And I think that probably the two most common things are postates and oligo, which is like low waters, mm-hmm. Which I just don't believe in either of those things being a problem.
Or breach. I've just done,
yeah, or breach or twins or whatever. But there are people who like wanted to do the semi-natural thing with like a, you know, a CPM or a birth center or whatever. The birth, don't get me started on the birth centers. But I just, and then they get transferred and they're so disappointed that they try to look for an alternative and just decide to stay at home.
So you live your life pretty much on call then, huh?
Yeah, I do completely. I'm almost never off call. Wow. Yeah. which is fine. It just means I have to stay in the lowlands to get my nature time. But,
mm-hmm. Wow. I guess I'm wondering if you just have any kind of message for the women out there who are serving, but they are still in the system and they're trying to, like I told you before we were recording, I work with a lot of women who are doulaing or midwifing in the system, and they just are afraid. They're afraid of the social backlash. They're afraid of finances. They're afraid of the risk. You know, they're afraid of all these things. And so they're really challenged by kind of what their next move is, but they're sick of seeing the violence and coming into an awareness that they're actually enabling it by, right. You know, participating in it in one way or another. And so, yeah, I just wonder what you might say to those women out there.
Oh Lord, I it's hard to think of anything without being just like super cheesy.
Go for it.
Like, I think just like completely follow your heart and trust that spirit's got you, and just like put a prayer into the universe that like send me the people who are supposed to be with me in a good way, and I will give them the best care, which means not holding regs above who they are, you know, not holding regs above someone's body. And you know, the more of us who can practice this way, the more support and protection there is for all of us. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the better care there is for birthing people, and you know, the more we can shift this paradigm completely. And so I have felt completely safe in my practice, and I've been practicing for 10 years now. And so you can do it. basically just do it. Follow
just
your heart.
Just do it.
It'll be fine. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and your stories and your energy and your devotion to this important work.
Yeah, same. Thank you.
That's it for today, everyone. Join us next week for another episode of the Free Birth Podcast. Thanks for joining us. And remember, your body, your choice. Lots of love.